Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It has been a tough week in policing news locally and nationally, and we want to talk with you about it for the rest of the hour today. Over the weekend, the Boston Globe revealed that the Boston Police Department was aware of allegations of child sex abuse by one of its officers, Patrick Rose, as far back as 1995. Rose served for two more decades, including as a police union head. He's now charged with abusing six children. In response to criticism yesterday, Acting Mayor Kim Janey called for rapid release of police investigation files on Rose, which the department has resisted doing, and she announced the first executive director for the city's new Office of Police Accountability and Transparency. All of this, even as people gathered in the streets of Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, for a third night of protests, and an officer is charged with second-degree manslaughter today after killing 20-year-old Dante Wright. Wright was black. He was unarmed and just a handful of miles from the courthouse where former police officer Derek Chauvin is currently on trial for the murder of George Floyd. Martin Luther King Jr. famously said, quote, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." Is it bending towards justice? Are we making progress? Or are we watching the moment and the momentum for justice, for reform, for accountability and transparency hit a brick wall? We want to know what you think, and we want to know how you're feeling. Call us, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. We do hope that in a bit, Dan Linsky, former superintendent in chief of the Boston Police Department, will join us. We're waiting for him, but we also have such a thoughtful guest with us to help us with this conversation, Rahsaan Hall, who is the director of the Racial Justice Program for the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. Rahsaan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me back, Tiziana.
Rahsaan, how are you feeling this week?
A little overwhelmed and anxious, just knowing that this is something that we continue to see. Dante Wright's killing is one of over 260 police killings that have taken place in just the first 3.5 months of 2021, and no less than 10 miles away from where the trial of Derek Chauvin is happening. So it's a lot, and it's not new. And the things that have been put in place to address these things don't go far.
At the risk of sounding naive and asking you this, you say it's a lot, and it is. Did you expect after the events of last summer and last fall, did you think it would be less at this time this year?
No, because, you know, I would have had to have been blind to history because, you know, I remember when Rodney King was beaten mercilessly by the police. And that resonated with the stories of folks from my community that had told me about police brutality and beatings. And, you know, and we can fast forward to 2013 or 2014 or 15 or 16 and to see people turn out in mass numbers to the streets to demand more accountability, to demand greater transparency, to demand charges be brought. And yet, and still, we're still at a place where we're seeing overwhelmingly unarmed black men, but also black women and other people of color being gunned down by police in ways that are just unjustified, maybe legally meeting the definition of justification in some instances, but morally, it's a struggle to grapple with.
Listeners, what are you expecting from this moment? What are you expecting in progress towards police reform? We have state legislation now on the books, city of Boston working towards police reform. We're going to talk more about Boston in just a moment. How are you feeling this week? Are you worn and torn? Just give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Rahsaan, we will come back to the national moment, but I want to bring our eyes to Boston, and I want to ask you your reaction to the Patrick Rose case when you first heard about it.
It was deeply disturbing. As a former Suffolk County Assistant District Attorney, I certainly had interactions with Pat Rose, nothing very meaningful, but I knew who he was, and there's, you know, very little that surprises me anymore, but it was, I think it speaks volumes about the nature of the institution of policing where someone like a Pat Rose can commit crimes, can violate children, and have the department know about it, conduct an investigation, allow him to stay on the force, but not only that, ascend to a position of power in one of the more powerful police unions in the Commonwealth, one of the most vocal spokespeople or opponents to accountability and reform. And that just speaks volumes to the problems inherent in policing. And so to hear those revelations, it was disturbing. I don't know that I was necessarily shocked, but I was very disappointed and somewhat surprised.
You know, I have noticed that in statements over the last week, Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins has often taken care to begin her statements by supporting the work of police officers and all the good police doing their jobs every day. I want to pair that with Acting Mayor Kim Janey, who has directed the department to release redacted copies of the internal affairs investigation into Rose by the end of the week. I just want to play you some sound of her talking about that yesterday.
To repair the fabric that binds our communities together, we must prioritize transparency and accountability.
And it seems, Rahsaan, like there is this push and pull in repairing the fabric, in telling the truth about the fullness of this moment, what the challenges are, not lumping everyone together and yet not failing to call out what needs to be called out. What's the right line to walk across there?
I don't know that there ever is going to be a right line for people in elected office, because the moment that you say anything that is perceived, that a person in elected office says anything that is perceived as a slight against the institution of policing, they receive pushback. And I think that's it's unacceptable. But it's also a political reality. I don't necessarily see the need to acknowledge the so-called good police officers when calling out those who have been involved and engaged in acts of misconduct. But because of the way police unions and police more generally respond to these situations, that's a political third rail for people. And I think part of the conversation that advocates and people in community have been pushing towards, either abolition or divestment from policing, gets to the heart of the problem with policing. It's as if the institution itself is somehow beyond reproach when it's not. And there cannot be justice without accountability. And if calling out the misconduct and the misbehavior and the bad practices is somehow disparaging to the institution, then how could we ever have accountability and no less justice?
I want to go to the phones here for a minute, Rahsaan. 1-800-423-8255. To join our conversation, tell us how you're feeling this week. Tell us, are you optimistic about the prospects of police reform in Boston, in Massachusetts, in the country? Is it a hard week for you? We have Obo on the line from Lunenburg. Obo, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'll be honest with you. I heard your question, and hearing about Dante Wright's death really crushed me Monday morning. It just ruined my whole day after a great weekend. For that to happen in Minneapolis, of all places, I feel like systemic change isn't going to happen. We can pass laws all we want, but until there is a generational change in policing, you know, your last guest was just talking about the, you know, cops protecting cops. We need new attitude. We need a whole new set of police officers. The good ones, you know, we got to replace them all, I feel like.
Thanks for your call, Obo. You know, Rahsaan, I want to tap into the first part of Obo's comments, especially there, just having that steam taken out at the beginning of the week and the weathering that people, especially Black Americans, are feeling with another story like Dante Wright. We will come back and talk more about reform on the ground here, but what's your reaction to Obo?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a common experience by a lot of people who see these killings of Black people and other people of color, and just wonder, when will it ever end? And there becomes this sense of hopelessness and frustration, because for every moment that we think that there might have been some opportunity for reform, we're confronted with another incident of someone being killed by the police. And it has a depressing effect on us. It could potentially stifle movements and a desire for change. But I think what's so inspiring in these moments, despite the pain and the frustration, is advocates, and particularly young people and the people across all classes and races and ethnicities, pushing for, if not abolition, for divesting from police, reimagining something. But to his point, like, we've got to start from scratch, because the system that we have right now, you know, some will argue that it is working the way that it was intended to work. Those who will note policing's roots in the slave patrols, or even in northern cities where it was an institution that was created beginning as night watch groups, but also to police and control the unwanted immigrant populations. So to its core, there's only so much difference that we're going to get out of reform. And it's not until we make those deep, meaningful changes that we're going to see anything different.
1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation. And as we go forward, I do want to note, we had scheduled Dan Linsky, former superintendent of chief of the Boston Police Department, to join us. He is not able to join us for this conversation. I just want to mark that we had hoped to have a voice of someone who had worked in law enforcement alongside us. Rahsaan, you and I can carry this forward. And, you know, I'm hearing you talking about the defund movement. I want to bring it back to Boston. There are a couple of things I want to talk about there. I'm noting Gene Rivers' press conference earlier this week, where he called for policing, actually. He called for attention in neighborhoods in response to the shooting of Delois Brown on her porch on Saturday. We covered that with members of the team of the city of Boston who are doing trauma response yesterday. Is there tension around the need for the to protect and serve of the police department, and the need for reform around accountability, transparency, and how we fund the set of systemic challenges that we currently call on police to respond to?
Practically speaking, there is a tension, but there doesn't need to be. And I think the call for greater resources for policing is honestly misguided. We're going to continue to address the symptoms, but not the root cause. And so we can put more police on the street, but that's not going to stop young people from getting guns in their hands. That's not going to stop the cycles of violence that are related to trauma. An overwhelming majority of people who are arrested and charged and convicted and serving sentences for violence offenses have been victims of violence themselves. And until we get to dealing with people's mental health issues or issues around substance use disorder or the lack of opportunities in community, the very types of things that we can use resources from policing to invest in community, we're going to continue to see this cycle of violence. And I understand from a very human level, wanting to prevent and address those types of things in an immediate way. I could not imagine what her family is going through, where she's sitting out on her porch doing what she has every right to do and should be doing, and to be struck down like that. I also understand the reality that if we just put more police on the street, that's going to further traumatize and exacerbate the underlying issues that have not been addressed by more police in generations past.
Rahsaan, I hear from the control room that Dan Linsky, former superintendent in chief of the Boston Police Department and now a managing director in Kroll's security risk management practice, has joined us. Dan Linsky, are you there?
I am. How are you?
Glad to have you join us. Thanks. Dan, I'm going to jump right in, and I want to ask you, we were just talking about the tension between reduction in funding, calls to defund the police, calls for security and safety after an incident like the shooting of Delois Brown this weekend on Olney Street. From a former law enforcement officer's perspective, how are you thinking about the balance in the push to shift funding to social services, mental health supports, et cetera, and away from the criminal justice dimension of responding to communities?
Yeah, I think the need to have all of those resources that Rassam was just talking about funded completely so that we can have services that provide education, provide opportunities for economic improvement for folks, to help with the mental health crisis, to deal with other societal issues are crucial. We also need police, and we need police to do things differently. And, you know, part of that means more intense training, different training. We've trained police how to deal with bad guys in the community and how to, you know, make stops and how to protect themselves. We haven't trained police how to do community engagement work. We haven't trained police how to get out of their car and have conversations and be proactive before they're in the stress of a 911 call when adrenaline's pumping. That's training we need to do with the community in the academy, and we need resources to make sure we're having those voices heard. If I was running the academy today, one of the voices that I would have prominently throughout would be Rassam and anyone else he recommended, to have conversations about understanding what the community wants police to do and how they want us to do it. So I don't disagree with the fact that we need more funding for that, but I would also say that we need more training for police and more ability to take them off the street where they're dealing with 911 calls and do more of the community intervention work that we try to do with the Safe Street Teams in Boston years ago.
And Dan, are we on, and then I'm going to go to the phones just to give everyone a heads up, but are we on a path to meaningful police reform? Are we in a moment where it's going to happen?
I think we've never heard as much energy and strength behind the conversation for change, right? We would have a program and do a photo op and think that was going to end it, and it hasn't. I think we are. I think there are some challenges ahead. The tensions are still there. You know, police has their kind of feet sometimes set and not looking to move forward, and community sometimes, you know, has their feet set, not looking to move forward. We've got to both come off of, you know, our conversations and get into learning and sharing. And I think the energy's there, and I think the possibilities are great. It's a huge challenge right now. It's a huge challenge. But from that, I think, is a great opportunity to change policing going forward.
Let's grab a couple caller voices here. We've got Joe on the line in Roxbury. Joe, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for letting me speak. I think the first thing that you have to do is address the way the police are deployed and how they're used. Right now, they can work up to, I think it's 105 hours a week. Anyone that works week after week, over 60 hours a week, is not effective in their job. We have officers that make $200,000-$300,000 a year because they're on the job constantly, and, or supposedly on the job constantly. We all know what happened out at Troop E, where they were supposed to be on the job and they were just charging the taxpayers for work they never did. And actually, that happened out at the Boston Police Evidence Locker too. They were another situation of charging the taxpayers for work that was not done, padding the payroll.
Joe.
And I think what we've got to do is we've got to make sure that they reduce their hours of work so they can be effective, they can work safely, they're not agitated, they're not overtired.
Thanks,
and,
Joe.
You know,
Joe, I'm going to take it back from you there. Thank you, because it gives us a chance. And Rassam, I'm going to turn back to you here, because I also want to note that we got a budget from Acting Mayor Kim Janey this week. She is proposing cutting police overtime, this time by a third. Mayor Marty Walsh, when he was mayor, attempted to and tried to cut it to $48 million, but they're on track to spend $65 million. There's a budget dimension to this. There's a staffing dimension. The Boston Police Patrolmen's Union has asked for several hundred more permanent officers. Acting Mayor Janey actually includes in her budget funds to hire 30 more officers. So this overtime picture, there's the fatigue dimension, there's the scandal dimension, and there's the staffing dimension.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in order to meaningfully address police violence and misconduct, you know, there has to be this shift in reallocation of the money We're taking a close look at Mayor Janey's budget, but the reality of making cuts from overtime isn't going to do anything because the city's legally obligated to pay all the overtime. So you can set a budget all you want. But and I think city council had a hearing that said, you know, we're almost a third of the way or two thirds of the way into the budget that Mayor Walsh cut. And so I think two things are important to recognize. One that Superintendent Linsky said and one that Joe mentioned. And so, you know, what police are called to do, like what 911 dispatch calls for service. It's ridiculous the amount of things that police get called on to do. And I think that's a huge issue. There should need to be training and dispatch, but there also, again, needs to be more resources, alternative resources than the police. But then two, the other thing that Joe mentioned around these staffing levels. And I think that also impacts police and how they interact. And I think that's true. But if we're redirecting people to other sources, other services, that we don't need to have the staffing levels that we currently have to address all of the calls for service. And there's fewer incidents that people are being harassed or being stopped, are being wrongfully accused of things. And that can help impact the relationship between community and police.
Let's grab one more caller voice here. Julie from Westford. Julie, briefly, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for listening. All good points. The officers do need training and they need support. Not all are bad. Many are good. But this is a societal problem, and we all need to be engaged in fixing this problem. We all need to stop being in denial that there's an issue. All lives matter. Black lives have been completely tortured, and we need to be aware of that and do something about it at every level in our society.
Thank you for the call, Julie. So, Dan Linsky, I want to turn back to you. We're starting to run low on time. You know, we talk about things like staffing, budget issues, the call from Joe, and then we get to the existential moment that we just heard from Julie. How do we, what is a piece of traction that we can get on deep reform in a department like the Boston Police Department, which we know has a history of being self-protective and insular?
So, we've had issues in the police department and we've had issues in our society. There are all kinds of problems that we have to deal with. We also have had some great work and some great effort by officers there. We need to stop pointing the fingers of blame at each other and start figuring out how we work together on a solution. We've got to accept, law enforcement has to accept, and sometimes it's hard to accept that, their work they do is disparately impacting communities of color. However, we're not in that alone. Rahsaan and I sat in community meetings when we were both on the Grove Hall Safe Neighborhood Task Force team, where the community was saying to us, why don't you do more arrests? We need more search warrants. This place is the problem. That place is the problem. They were directing us in how they wanted us to be police. The federal government was funding us in how they wanted us to police. We have to go back to the drawing board and meet with community and see, okay, what's the mission you want us to do and how do you want us to do it? And what are the rules? And if we follow the rules, we need to support the officers. You know, sometimes we get these YouTube videos,
Dan,
and it's
just,
not pretty. But we need to have conversations, listen to each other, learn from each other, and come up with a shared vision on how we want to police communities, including Boston.
I appreciate that. Dan Linsky, former superintendent in chief of the Boston Police Department. Rahsaan Hall, director of the Racial Justice Program for the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. Let's talk more about this. I hope you'll both come back. Thanks very much.
Absolutely.